Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. I want to thank God for another day of being here and allowing us to gather once again and be able to bring out these topics. Tonight, Monster Miles had to go off on a family death, and his segment will be preempted for the night, as well as because of the fact that tonight's topic is extremely serious and is something that we really must get into discussions and hopefully get some people aware, including teens. And I'm praying that all my teenage listeners that emailed me today are logged in and listening, whether you call in or you don't. I also am encouraging parents of teens that are an example of tonight's topic, or teens that are in the situation, to give a call in tonight, share your stories. You don't have to give your names if you don't feel comfortable, but if, you know, share your stories and let's give you some encouragement. Okay, so before we get started, let me shout out my affiliate sponsors out there, Mr. Barry Mason of, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM in New York, currently with iSoulRadio.com on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m., and also the CEO of Track One Entertainment, that wonderful event company that gives you the greatest in R&B events, in musical shows, in the greatest venues in New York City that there is. And all of you have had the blessing and the privilege of being a part of Barry's events. Know that when you buy a ticket, you're in for the greatest entertainment of your life. So I thank Barry for being a part of our team and allowing us to be a part of his. And moving on to my affiliate event planning women divas out there that are with Barry on board as well, Simply Sensational Inc. Entertainment's Marcia Morgan and Stephanie Hammond-Tillette, another set of people that when they get together and they put together these grown and sexy parties, you are never disappointed. It's always going to be a blast. You never know what to expect. So once again, ladies, to you, thank you also for your support and for allowing us to be on your team and being on ours. So without further ado, we are going to get right into our topic before we take our early break, and we're going to get started. I came across some articles today. As you all know, today's topic is entitled, I Love You to Death, the rising epidemic of teen domestic violence and dating. Okay, we all already know about the horrors of domestic abuse with adults, but I found some very disturbing factors that make teen abuse even worse. And the things that came up in these different articles, plus a little later on, we're going to have Deacon Zeddy Williams, our favorite guest, come in to share his story. For those of you that were not on yesterday or the day before, he touched on the fact that he had a niece, very high-profile murder case that took place last November, where his 19-year-old niece, promising young, beautiful woman, danced for 106 in Park, had aspirations to be a criminal lawyer, was going to school, dated the wrong guy, and when she broke up with him, even after 6 months, he didn't know what the word no means or that it was over. So what happened was he told her to meet him because he wanted to talk to her, and I guess I'm going to get better details from him, but either it was a setup or he didn't like the way the conversation was going and wind up shooting this young lady to death while she sat in a car waiting on him. So this 19-year-old beautiful woman lost her life to a bad choice in dates, in a relationship. And she got the idea that it was a bad relationship. She tried to get out of it, but the abusive boyfriend refused to let her go. So these are the things that we as parents are facing, because, you know, when young children get up there and they decide that they're in love, or they found the one, or this person is opening their nose or turning their head. We become the enemies for telling them that we see something bad in these people. We become the enemies. We become the people that they want to push away because they can't see what we see. Then we have to figure out a way to appease or adjust to keeping our children in safe, plain sight without making them feel like we're against them. That becomes a really big fight because you have to go through that every day without boyfriends and girlfriends in the picture just because they're teen. Other tragedies that resulted from teen domestic violence in dating, in relationships, which Lord knows that some of these young girls and boys, to say dating, to say relationship at that early age, it sickens me because, you know, they're too young to even understand what it means to deal with themselves. So imagine trying to be a partner in a relationship or a commitment so early on before their natural development is able to absorb or understand the repercussions of emotional heartbreak or what comes with giving yourself up just to a one person, you know, exclusively so early. Not realizing that there's going to be many more Mr. Perfects or Mrs. Rights before they actually get to the one that counts for the rest of their life. Yesterday, we touched on two other domestic violence stories in teen relationships. One was a girl named Rayanne, and one was a girl named Otrala. Otrala wasn't fortunate enough to walk away from the boyfriend that was the ex of Rayanne. Rayanne realized that this boyfriend she was with was abusive. Her mother got desperate and moved Rayanne away to a whole other state. Well, when Rayanne left, she still didn't give up the boyfriend because she still was contacting him and believing that he was sorry. But somehow, some way, Rayanne's mother wind up keeping her safe from Marcus. Meanwhile, Marcus moved on to another girl that was just Rayanne's age in his school that currently was there. Well, Otrala was not fortunate enough to walk away. After she decided she wanted to break up with him after he pushed her one time too many, he cornered her in the school in a second floor hallway and tried to deal with her. When she said no, he pulled out an 8-inch kitchen knife, stabbed her in the neck and the head and the abdomen, and by the time the staff heard the screaming, she was already dying, and she died in the staff's arms. So these, of course, are the worst-case scenarios of teen violence. It's the worst-case scenarios, but teen violence can only escalate. It can never be neutralized unless someone gets help or people intervene. And being that you may have your teen being in love with their abuser or believing they're in love with their abuser, you have a problem. Now, in tonight's discussion, several points were brought up in a few of these, I'm going to say, in quote, expert articles that came up regarding teen dating and violence in teen relationships. And I want to hear your thoughts on the matter because there are certain points that were brought up tonight that just absolutely threw me for a loop, coming from experts on the situation, considering that half of these experts actually said exactly the opposite when it came down to domestic abuse in adults. So I want to hear what you all think of these points. And if you are out there listening, call in at 347-327-9967 and give me your opinion, your insights, and let me know what's going on. Now, I will be taking a little bit of an extended early break while I gather all this information and contact our panelists for the night. And then we will be back to get this discussion rolling, okay? So right now, what I'm going to start with is CeCe Peniston's Keep On Walking, because teens, if you are dealing with someone that says they love you and you're hurting, you need to tell them to do exactly what CeCe says, okay? So I'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Yeah. Little song we got called Striving. You gotta keep moving. No matter what the obstacle, no matter what the test, you gotta push through it. He'll help you.
Every day of the week, when I see you got his angels rocking over me. Looking for some healing, not a fake feeling. Tell me, do you feel me? I didn't know who to call, no friends at all, till I heard a voice in my head. It said, keep pressing on, and keep striving, striving on.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Hi, welcome back, everybody. That was Dave Hollister, Striving. And before that, you heard CeCe Peniston's Keep On Walking. I played the Dave Hollister song to give you guys a little bit of Christian support and some encouragement to keep looking up and, you know, having some faith and making sure everything that you deal with on your daily basis, you always have the option of knowing that, you know, God is up there listening and he's there for you. Tonight's topic is I Love You to Death, Teen Dating Violence. We spoke a little bit earlier on in the broadcast about the statistics that more so than that, actually we touched on some fatalities of examples of teen dating violence. And we spoke that yesterday, Deacon Zeddy Williams, as all of you that have been chronic listeners here, have heard this man speak on many things that he has been through, experienced, has done himself, and is now advocating against. He had personal loss through a domestic violence situation in a teen relationship through his niece, who, as you heard yesterday, she was a promising young woman. Rajonia Bell, I want to make sure I'm saying Janae Bell. And she was aspiring to be a criminal lawyer. She was going to school. She danced on 106 in Park, the hip-hop show on BET. And what happened was, 6 months after she finally, you know, said she had enough and broke off with her boyfriend, he wasn't taking no for an answer, I guess. He kept texting her, according to what Deacon Williams said yesterday, texting her, and finally asked, can he meet her? And despite everybody's advice to her that she didn't have to meet with him, she went and she met him, believing that he wasn't going to hurt her that way, especially since they're broken up, more than likely. So what happened was, while she awaited him, either the conversation went wrong or it was a setup from the beginning, but he shot her to death in the car while she awaited him. 19 years old, promising career, and over a choice of having she didn't choose the abuser, he became abusive. And as a victim of domestic violence myself, I can tell you, as from an adult standpoint, it's hard to leave your abusers, because it's not always as cut and dry as people think. But she had the courage to leave, but he didn't have the courage or the willingness to let her go. I'm bringing up a few points from a couple of articles that I've read today from so-called experts speaking on the reasons why teen dating happened, or the factors that go with teen dating. And there is a website that has an article that's called, it's www.vawnet.org. And they spoke about teen dating violence, and it's supposed to be a review of risk factors and prevention efforts. Now, this was written by Maura O'Keefe with contributions from Leah Aldridge, and there's no date on when this exactly was released, but there's a lot of older references. Now, everyone that speaks or thinks of violence, domestic violence, let's not even talk teens just yet, just domestic situations, period, believes that it comes from what they see. Now, we all are very aware, and we're all mature adults here to know, that while a majority, or more than likely a factor of a child acting out or becoming a certain way, is based on something they've learned, because children pick up learned behavior, but understand, as they get older, a lot of it is learned behavior, but it also can be that they've picked up and learned things for themselves based on other things that they saw. Peer pressure, copying the TV shows that they see, listening to their favorite rapper say certain things, watching video girls on TV dancing in next to nothing. So these are things that children pick up outside the home and can't really be blamed on the parents, especially if the parents are trying to regulate that, okay? So one of the things that was said was that teens that grow up to be abusive in their girlfriend-boyfriend relationships, there was a split opinion between the group of experts. Half of the group believed that a predisposition or pre-exposure to domestic violence in the home has absolutely nothing to do with how they'll grow up and treat other people. Okay. And then the other half says that it has everything to do with it. Then there was a small neutral group that believes that it all depends on what the individual teen takes from it. It's what that teen feels at that moment. Now, I'm no expert, but let's take some common sense here, okay? Children learn what they see. They learn by what they see. They learn by mimicking. Okay? When you're little with your child, before they can walk and talk, you say, Mama, Dada, and they follow you. When you want to teach your baby girl how to use the potty, you teach her how to sit. Boys that want to learn the potty, they're taught by their men how to stand up and you know, use their penises to stand up and pee in the toilet. Okay? So they learn by example. They learn by what they see. Now, maybe daddy or mommy didn't take the fist of that teen and say, go punch this girl in the face, go beat her up. But if they grow up and see that their father called their mother all sorts of derogatory names and was beating her up and was telling her, you don't have a right to say, think, feel, or do anything without me telling you to do so. And then they'll see a mother that is scared of this abuser and will comply with everything he says. If they see that this woman is treating their father the same way and cursing him out and doing whatever, they're going to grow up one of three ways. Hating what they see and wanting to grow up vowing to make a difference. Okay? Being indifferent, meaning that they could take it either way, be nice or not. Or they'll grow up and be repeat offenders. And usually, being a repeat offender is the most biggest outcome that happens. Especially if there was no options. There were no options out there to show them a different way. Especially if, no matter how many times the police were called on the abuser got to get released from jail and come back home. Especially if the abuser didn't respect an order of protection or a restraining order. What are those children going to see? What are they going to believe? They are going to believe that what they see is what is, and they're going to grow up and repeat. So for the experts that are saying it has absolutely nothing to do with it, what planet do you live on? And yes, I agree with the neutral little piece in that circle, that yes, it still, in the end, still depends on the teen themselves making a decision. But the decisions that they make is going to be based on the options they felt they have. So what in anyone's expert right mind would give someone the ability to think that a child being predisposed to domestic violence in the home is not going to have any factor whatsoever or any bearing whatsoever on a teen growing up to become an abusive youth offender in relationships? So before I bring my panelists in, that's the first question I'm going to pose. The experts debate on that prior exposure to domestic abuse is a contributing factor to teens who abuse. Some experts believe it has everything to do with it, and others believe it has nothing to do with it. And a small neutral party believes that it is all on what the teen believes to do. Okay? I'm going to ask that question first. Our first panelist is in for the night. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen, while I bring them in. Good evening. You're on the air with Katie Barnett.
Hi, Katie. It's Elaine. How are you?
Hi, Lady Diamond. Okay, listeners, you all know Lady Diamond. There is another panelist on the line. Let me bring them in. Welcome.
Good
to
evening.
Monica. Hi there.
Good
How
evening.
Are you?
Very good evening.
Tonight's show is called I Love You to Death, Teen Dating Violence. Okay? You guys came in a little bit late. I brought up Deacon Williams, your niece. We spoke about your niece yesterday, and that was what inspired today's topic, was what took place and the experiences you went through. And also the other articles that we've read about women or girls that went through similar fates, okay, as your niece did. So I was bringing up an article that I read among the many that I was researching today. So I don't know if you heard the question, so I'm going to ask you this question. And I'll start with you, Lady Elaine, okay? There's a group of experts that were debating on whether or not a child's predisposition or prior exposure to domestic violence has any weight or bears any strength or determining factors on whether a teen will get his first girlfriend or her first boyfriend and abuse. Some experts believe that it has absolutely nothing to do with it. Others believe it has everything to do with it. And then there's a small few that's divided in the middle, thinking that it could affect them, but it's really based on what the teen believes to do. So, Elaine, what's your opinion on that?
My opinion? What was the question? Because I couldn't hear. There's a lot of static.
Okay. There was a group of experts that were talking on the subject on whether or not a child being predisposed based on what they saw being exposed to domestic violence in their own household, okay, has any determining factors on that child becoming an abuser themselves. Half of the experts believe that it has everything to do with it. Others believe it doesn't. Then there's that few in the middle that believe that it's neither here or there. It goes to what the teen themselves choose to do. What's your opinion on that?
All right, so my opinion on it is that, all right, experts, they're wrong. Usually they're wrong. You know, I find it's something that they say that the abuse doesn't come from, you know, from what they see. Yes, it does come from what they see. Like you said before, kids, they learn a lot. They learn very quickly at a young age. And when they get older, it may be a subconscious thought, and by the time they become a teenager, and I would think about, you know, whatever else is going on in the household. I mean, if they see the father abusing the mother and they're 2 years old, that would be something in mind. By the time they get 15, 16 years old, it's already in their subconscious. They're already thinking about it at the moment. They didn't even, until they start reacting to it, they have no clue where it came from. Years go by, their parents probably don't even lay a hand on each other, probably no longer together anymore, but it's still there. It's still there. They seen it when they were young. So, you know, by the time they hit their teenager, it's in the back of their mind, and they're even noticing, you know, how they affect, you know, what they're doing. Yeah, I mean, they're beating someone up, and they're like, oh, you know, I don't know where it came from. You don't know where it came from, but then, you know, it ran through the line. You just don't remember it. They're either too young or something. You know, I mean, like I said, experts, they're not exactly on point with what they say.
I agree with you on that one, because those very same experts are the ones that say that children learn by what they see. And we know, being parents, common sensibly, even the way we taught our children the ABCs was based on them mimicking. Okay, now, if that's the case, I don't care if maybe there is no determining factor. Okay, obviously, if that's what they see, that's what they're going to believe it is. So I will ask you the same question, Deacon Williams. What do you feel about these experts, the ones that believe that it has everything to do with it, the others that believe it doesn't, and then the middle that believes it's really based on what the teen themselves choose to do? What's your take on that?
Well, to excuse me. My take on it is that I was in a growing up, I was a child that witnessed spousal abuse, my father against my mother. But I was one of the fortunate ones, turned that negative into a positive, because I had always promised myself that my girlfriend or my wife would never have to worry about me doing something like that to her, because I thought of it like this: how can my father say he loves my mother and he doesn't like that? You know, but not all children are fortunate enough to have that type of mindset. Some of them, they get it causes very serious mental problems, because those children are scarred for life. You know, it was a long time before I was able to have a real close relationship with my father, because I had a lot of hate and resentment in my heart towards him. And after seeing some of the beatings he would put on my mother, I growed up to be sort of like a protector of my mother after my father was no longer in the house.
Right. Yeah,
any male friend that she would have to come over to the house, I was like on top of it. And like, I let them know, hey, don't get too comfortable, because you're not going to be here very long. You know, and And then sometimes it would get me in trouble with my mother because she would say, hey, look, you stay in a child's place. I was like, I don't know this guy. You know, I said, and as a matter of fact, why is he even taking his shoes off? He don't live here. You know, so that, you know, it made me sort of a hard child coming up, you know, especially after my father was gone because I took on the responsibility of being the man of the house. And I feel as though, but violence against on any part, because now you have men that get physically abused by women too. I've witnessed that. So either way, it's wrong, and I feel it does have an effect on children, even if it's just a positive effect, and it has a negative effect. So it does have an effect on the children in the household.
Now, you're absolutely right, and I'm going to tell you something. There's two things I want to touch on based on what you just said, Deacon Williams, and one of them is that concept of, you know, you became the man of the house. The problem with that, especially in a domestic violence situation, is that the concept of being the man of the house then makes them believe that they're men and that they're grown, and that is a problem because while domestic violence, and this is a very sensitive subject to me because my own children had to deal with a lot of it, and I as a child grew up in that same situation, you know, and my father actually was out of the household and still came back to do certain things, and we had like a little twisted thing with him because while he was not in the household and not doing a darn thing for us, for some reason, he still was the visiting disciplinarian. Like my mother would call and say, you know, this and that happened, and he'll come from wherever he was to beat us and leave. So it was that type of situation. So we got a lot of our best lessons in life with a real twisted delivery of it through this situation. But domestic violence in a home, especially when there's a boy that's the oldest in the lot, okay, already forces children to grow up because they're seeing the most ugly side of things that really it destroys the innocence of childhood. Okay, so that I can say from experience and from seeing it. I mean, no matter where you are in life, if you've been through a domestically abusive household, you know, everybody has the same type of effect. There's something that affected you somehow from that, all right? Now, even the ones that grow up to be different, to do differently, still, as you just said, it was a long time before you had a good relationship with your dad even grown. Well, there are people that even though they don't grow up and would ever dare to hit a person, they'll never in their life be able to have really good concepts of true love right away.
Right.
Or trust that true love exists because they only know that love is associated with being beaten up or bruised or emotionally messed up or verbally abused or told that you're nothing. So that while that person is not striking out physically, or they're not emotionally abusing someone else, they are, like you said, sparked for life. The other situation that I wanted to bring up was that, you know, yes, you're seeing this abuse in your household. How can you possibly grow up thinking that it's not normal on some point? I don't care how much it may or may not have a factor. You saw this. Clearly, it's in there somewhere. It's in there somewhere. And a child that grows up, first of all, abuse already tells a man that a woman is to be beaten up, and it tells and girls that abuse usually see it from their house. Either girls who abuse usually come from this. They saw it happen to their mother, and they refuse to grow up and be at the hands or mercy of any man. So they become sort of too hard themselves. Or their father was one of those soft, nice guys, and their mother was the strong arm, and the father stood around, or the mother was one of those violent types, just so the father would never do anything where the mother could see. And that's what she believes is supposed to happen. But either way, it affects both sides. And just because a person is not going out and striking their fist at someone doesn't mean that there's not a negative effect from seeing abuse in that household. The other thing that came up was the reason why teen domestic abuse is so much more dangerous is because, think about this, how often does an adult victim of abuse report her partner?
Not very often.
Not very often, exactly. Thank you, sir. And you are an advocate out there, so you know. Policemen have a hard time getting a wife to admit that her husband beat her because we go through, this is the thing that women go through. We love the man we're with, okay? We can understand that maybe they're working too hard or they're frustrated because they can't find a job. We always allow for excuses for the behavior. We do. Even though we know we don't like what we're going through, even though we know that this is not right, this is not what it means, we still have this connection emotionally where we would allow them to get better. We would try to give them a chance to see that they're hurting us. And they're not respecting your efforts. They're expecting that you're going to let it happen again. And by that time, you're usually already too far into a situation to just get up and go. Or for those of you that have been abused, for people who have been abused that badly, even though you hate it, you can't stand it, and you beg for freedom, it's all you know. So getting up to leave and run out and try again, that's scarier than being beaten. At least you know what's going to happen from the day to day when you're in that situation. For those of you that don't understand it, try being in an abusive situation with a man or a woman that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Before you start making judgments and pointing fingers. Because I could tell you from experience, it's not as easy as you think. You have those abusers that will follow you everywhere that you go and make it hard for you to leave them. And you have those that will promise you the sun, the moon, and the world and do really good for a while. Then you have those that have a situation, like say you have 3 or 4 or 5 kids, that there's nobody going to take you in that quickly. You sure don't want to put your children in a shelter, so you convince yourself that you can live around it. You can ignore that person. Just don't get them mad, as long as your kids don't have to go through what you went through.
Uh-huh.
So for those of you who have never been in that situation, do not judge, because you don't know.
Exactly.
But for those that are going through it, and those of you that want to get out, take a real quick listen. You have to try at some point. And you got your teens that are out there, it'll never get better. They say sorry, it never goes away.
No.
Oh, no, you can guarantee it's going to happen again. If you did it once, he's going to do it again, and then again, and then again, and it's going to get worse every time.
Mm-hmm. And every time you return, the abuse will get better. Even if it was smooth sailing for a month or two, when it does start again, it's going to be twice as hard because they're going to remember that you left them and put them through hell when you left. And it's going to get worse. And if you are broken up with the person and they are texting you and they are calling you and they are telling you, please just come meet me, don't think that because you are away from them that they don't still feel they own you. You have no reason to meet with the person whatsoever. And if they want to meet you, let it be around cops. If you feel that there's something that they have of yours or whatever the case is.
Yes.
You don't need to be meeting them because there's nothing good up their sleeves except to try to get you right back into the position that kept them in power and kept you down. Every single girl or boy that believed it was going to get better is dead or injured for life. Dead or injured for life. Because they were good enough to say, maybe this person really learned their lesson. No. Take it from a abuser, which I want to get back to that link. And before this broadcast is over, a teenager who abused girlfriends himself but got help for himself spoke from firsthand knowledge of what it is that abusers feel. The crying doesn't get to them. Seeing you bruised up and busted lip doesn't get to them.
Nope, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them power in believing their fists got control.
Uh-huh.
I want to bring up the reasons why it's even more fatal to teens in abusive relationships. Because while a woman who's grown doesn't report her husband, or a man who's grown doesn't report his wife, teens will not do it because of 3 reasons. One, they don't want to let their parents, uncle, or someone who cares about them with some force know that this person is abusing them. And that's because they would probably deal with the abuse and believe it's going to get better than actually give up the abuser. They don't want to give up that person because they feel that they love them or that they're the best catch in the world and that they're the ones who's lucky to have them. So they'll keep it to themselves and they'll endure it before they would risk that person being cut from their lives or them forbidden to be seeing them.
Yeah, that is true. because my niece had been abused by this young man for almost a year, and she never told anybody in the family. She never went to the police, except for one time she did go to the police, but they did nothing.
And what happened? Because I'm going to tell you another thing. Police do not like to get involved with domestic violence
right.
cases. In the case of teens, it might be a bit different, but I have called the police plenty of times, and the abuser has come back. The abuser has come back right back. I had one that didn't care whether or not there was a restraining order in place or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because a restraining order can't stop a bullet. A restraining order can't stop a grab to your arm and a shove to the floor. What are you going to do?
A restraining order can't do anything.
Thank you.
A restraining order cannot do anything. Even I've experienced it. With me, I had a restraining order put against me. And for the simple fact is because I was defending myself against my daughter's father. I was defending myself because he was cornering me . He didn't want to let me go. And even with that restraining order, when they put order of protection against me, he still came after me, still followed me around. And even if I said, get away from me, and I called a cop, who's going to get arrested? Me.
But you do understand that they're aware of the fact that the people who file restraining orders also use that as a free pass to harass you. You have the right to go back and say, I'm the one under the restraining order to stay away from him, but I'm getting contacted. I mean, listen, the restraining order against you doesn't stop you from having rights. That I know. So you need to keep all the texts and record all the calls and do all that you got to do because then that restraining order will be lifted from you and put back on him. He doesn't get the right to have a free pass to come harass you if he's claiming that you're a danger to him.
Right.
Okay, it doesn't work like that.
Nope.
But in the case of these young ladies, including, you know, the tragic loss of your niece, Deacon Williams, the reason why these girls more than likely get caught in these things is because they still believe that the abuser will never go that far with them, will never hurt them that badly. Especially now that we're not together, they know they can't deal with me. And that's the reason why they trust that one last meeting. Now, in the case of Otrella, the girl that I brought up in the article yesterday, she went totally away from this guy, and he cornered her in a second-floor school hallway during classes. Okay, and stabbed her to death in the hallway while the staff just heard her scream. Before that, he was dating another girl that was in the same school, but her mother had to move her away for her own safety. The police did nothing. The courts did nothing. And the teens will hold on to what's shiny and new in their minds. And the parents who tried to take this away, it's like a baby wanting to have a teddy bear that they just dropped in some, you know, messed up garbage or something. You know it's germy and you're going to give it back to them, but you want to clean it first. They're going to scream and yell and bounce on the floor because they want that teddy bear. They don't see what you see. So you trying to tell your daughter, this guy is trouble. Oh, you know what? I love him. You just don't want this. You trying to tell your son, that girl is not good for you. You're the enemy. So now in order for you to be able to have some control and some safety watch over your child, you have to pretend or swallow some of your opinion by saying, okay, you know what? I'm just going to let you know that certain rules you're going to have to follow. What might be a better approach is you let them know, I still have my reservations, but I'm gonna let you know you're still my baby. And if you want to see this person, understand it's going to be done with me being able to watch very closely. Do we have a deal? These kids nowadays have no more support structure. They have no more options. They're left to fend to their own devices, to fend for themselves and try to figure out this big crazy world and their crazy hormonal shifts and all these other stuff. They don't have the grandmothers that stay home while the parents go work. They don't have the nosy neighbors that are involved saying, you shouldn't dress like that because you look like you're easy or you're fast. They don't have the church leaders opening their doors and offering support anymore. I don't care who keeps saying that I'm talking about church leaders. You are very much culpable in all of this. For those of you that are the remaining few from the old school days that are reaching out, as I said a million and six times, if the shoes are not for you, don't step in them. I'm not speaking to you. But for those of you that will be the first ones to hoop and holler, then I know you're guilty. Because if you're not opening your doors and doing what you're supposed to do and all you're caring about is your Cadillac or your Mercedes, shame on you. Shame on you. You're sending these kids to go right down to hell. And you will be accountable because the Bible says so. These children need structure, and parents are becoming more and more single and having to do it on their own. So you can blame the parents all you want. If you see them out there trying to work, then clearly they're not smoking weed with their kid. And even if they were the perfect two-parent home, counseling and spiritual guidance is still something that's needed and required. And you deadbeat fathers that are out there leaving your daughters to the hands of these people, get with it. Teens are not walking away from domestic abusive relationships as quickly as you think. They are dying. They're getting killed. Another situation, as we brought up, is that teens will trust in the character of the person that abuses them after a breakup. They believe that the protection of them no longer being together, especially as you said, Deacon Williams, your niece more than likely believes it's been 6 months. I've been telling him no. He doesn't believe that we could possibly have anything to say to me. He couldn't possibly believe he could force me to do anything because we're not together. And I don't believe he's going to hurt me like that, especially now that we're not together. And I don't want to get him hurt because I know my Uncle John will probably blow his brains out or beat him real bad. This is what these girls are thinking. And they're thinking that way because they're teenagers.
Yeah. There was a movie like this, you know, like years ago. I don't know if there's any other movies like that, but there was a movie that came out when I first saw years ago. That there was a girl that she played in Full House. She was like the older sister. And she was with a guy that was very abusive, to the point that when she ended the relationship, he tried to, like, you know, be nice to her and everything like that. And at the end, he pushed her off like a cliff or something, and he killed her.
Yeah,
it reminds me of that movie. I don't remember the name of the movie, but it's a very old movie.
There's another one.
I wish they could bring something like that up so the kids could watch it, so they could see, you know, and then like a situation like that, just to get out quick.
There was another one that was on Lifetime with the teenager. It was a single mom with a daughter, and then there was a two-parent home with the daughter, and the one with the two-parent home was actually dating the abuser, and because the single mother's daughter once got into trouble, they were like, oh, you're going to talk about my daughter, and you're the one that went into this and that and that and this, but yet the cousin knew that the guy that her cousin was with was abusive. And it wasn't until it was too late that the parents caught on. And by that time, this girl was getting beat up. He was, and at the end, he nearly shot her right in front of a bunch of people in a cafe.
Wow.
After she broke up and said, I'm done with it and I no longer want to talk to you. This girl was sneaking out the windows with the text phone, with everything, cursing out her parents because she wanted her phone and they took it away from her. Yes, a lot of these things happen. And you're right, Elaine. I will try to gather up all of those. Let's go back a little further with adult domestic violence. The Tracy Thurman story.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband was abusive. She left. The cop stood right there watching the husband stab her 43 times. She scarred
him. That's right. That movie I remember also. That was a crazy movie. She actually got away from him, and she actually lived in this one.
And that's because people are like, well, boys, you know, that's between them. That's a family thing. That's not the time when governments is not supposed to interfere. That's the time when you get in there and you get nosy.
Exactly.
You're going to sit there and tell a parent how to raise their child, but you're going to not sit there and interfere and tell a man how to deal with his wife or a boyfriend how to deal with his girlfriend and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Is this not a as my dad used to say, a butt backward way to be? These kids are dying. They're dying at 14. They're getting stabbed at 60. They're losing their ability to reproduce because they're getting stabbed in the abdomen or raped beyond by people they love. With guys that they broke up with for months. And the police are doing nothing. There was a story, I couldn't find the article, I was trying to figure out, a 14 and a half year old girl, okay, or 15, let me be correct. The girl was 15 and a half going on 16. Dated a very abusive guy. He's charming, charmed the pants off the mother, the father, everyone. Okay? This girl realized quickly. She was actually one of the quicker picker-uppers. Okay? Realized about a month into dating, I'm not living like this. She's not going to be beating up on me and, you know, knocking me down, embarrassing me, telling me I can't go to cheerleading with my cheerleading outfit. Okay? Not only did this guy beat her after they broke up and she was actually speaking to another a coach or something, a young coach tutor, okay, that they were going over routine for a big rally that they were supposed to have. This boy broken up with her for over 8 months, didn't like the fact that he's watching her speak to another male, okay, waited for her to come out of the locker room while she's waiting on her mother to come pick her up, takes her into the bleachers, under the bleachers somewhere, beats her up, rapes her, takes a bottle and rapes her with that. Cut her up. The girl is 15 and a half years old. Can't have children. Now she's scarred in the face. She's scarred for life. The police found out about it and say, oh, well, we couldn't figure out. We couldn't prove. He seemed to have a good alibi. Well, you know, you did go with him willingly. And they wonder why the gangs are prominent. Williams, you being the advocate that you are, having come from a bad side of the tracks and having dealt with personal loss in this situation, please tell us what it is you would try to do or what it is that you are trying to organize, if anything, and what it is that you want to say to them.
Well, first of all, I have a problem with some of these older adults. When you try and get them involved to come to a community meetings and address issues like this, they want to do a lot of lip service, but I mean, what could it hurt to come to a meeting that only lasts an hour, and it's concerning your children? I can't understand that, and I will never be able to understand it, because when I was coming up, we had people that held community organizations, and the community where I live at now. I remember when I first came here to Toledo, I used to go to the meetings with my grandfather, and his gymnasium used to be full from wall to wall. It was a pretty nice size basketball gym, and I sit back and I realize and I see how much things have changed and how people have changed and gotten comfortable with the way things are. And I have never been that type of person. I'm always wanting to extend myself as much as possible and trying to make changes for the better. The way I go about things here, I try and talk to as many young people as I can, whether it be young ladies or young men, because say if you can get through just only two or three, you're accomplishing a great deal. So that's what I try and stay focused on. And whoever is around that wants to contribute and help me out, okay, I welcome that. But I'm not going to let anything hold me back from trying to get to some of these young people and let them know, hey, what you're dealing with has been around long before you were born and brought into this world. And it's not something that's new. It's not something that's new. This thing is old. I mean, you look at some of the generations that went by, when they were going through abuse, it was like kept secret behind closed doors. Now it's so prevalent out here in society. It's like almost like people are accepting it, and I don't understand that. You know, it's really mind-boggling to me. It's I don't know. The only thing that I try and stay focused on, though, is to stay in prayer. And hopefully I can get through to some of these people out here.
Yeah.
Elaine?
No, yeah, I agree with you, because there's so much that we can do for these teenagers. There's so much that we can do. And they're in a violent situation, and especially in a relationship, and they know it's wrong, no matter how much they are being. Only the beginning of a relationship, it starts off with mental abuse, which we all know. It's always starts off with mental abuse. Once that mental abuse goes further and they just let it keep going stronger and stronger, that's when the physical abuse goes in. And these kids don't know, can't see only teenagers, but it's also adults too. They don't know the difference between, okay, this person loves me, or this person just is using me and, it's just using me as a punching bag. They really can't tell the difference. And even if they could, they still can't, pull themselves away from a situation like that, like in such an abusive relationship. That, he was just calling me ugly, he was just joking around. Or he just punched me in my arm, he slipped, and, hit me in my eye. She punched me in my face, and it was no big deal. I did something wrong to her, and that's it. No, it doesn't work that way. And they have to realize that, if you're going to be going into a healthy relationship, it cannot be no abuse in it. So once the mental abuse starts, it gets stronger, like I said. And it goes right into the physical abuse, and anything can happen after that physical abuse. And sometimes it doesn't even start with the mental abuse at all. It just goes straight into physical abuse, and the person will think, okay, he or she loves me, which in actuality, no, they don't. They just have a really bad mental, they really have a problem. They really have a problem, and it has to be seen in a way that it has to be fixed. It has to be fixed as soon as possible. Get away, stay far away from the person. Person comes after you, make sure you have a huge group of people, support system on, by your side to push this person away. Because, that the person who's being abused is gone. Just because they don't not have a strong support system.
Absolutely. And I will tell you this, one of the biggest traps that, oddly enough, this also applies to adult women, and I will say that, okay? But what I'm about to say is that although it applies to an adult, it is much more dangerous when it goes to a teen, because a teen doesn't have the logical thinking, the critical thinking that an adult has. But the first thing that a girl thinks is cute is when a guy is jealous that she's dating, okay? Oh, yeah, he's so jealous. He's so jealous. That's not cute. That's a sign, the first sign.
No, he's got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he don't want me to wear this. What? When a man or a woman starts to tell you that there are things that they liked about you when they got with you, that's got to change because they remember what they saw in it when they were with you. Listen, no. Love is not about you having to cut yourself down to fit them while they stay up. Love is not about physical pain. Love is not about you feeling embarrassed all the time or having to hide or in fear. The person in your life that loves you is supposed to be your complementary balance. You're supposed to go to that person when you've had a bad day and be able to feel good with that person. You're supposed to be able to have that person feel supportive of the ventures you want to do. You want to be a lawyer? That person should be there with you, helping you study for your exam. Not telling you, what do you want to be a lawyer for? That's stupid. Girls can't be lawyers.
Uh-huh.
I don't want you to be a lawyer because then you're going to leave me, honey. Oh, my God, that's a big one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a big one.
If you go away, then, I'm going to miss you, and then I don't know. Somebody might take you away from me. What?
Yep. Heard that one.
Yeah.
Don't think
one.
I'm talking because I'm holier than thou, because, ladies, I was a teenager too, stupid as everything else, because you're supposed to be stupid at 15. You're supposed to be stupid at 15, really. You're supposed to have not an ounce of common sense, because that's what you're supposed to learn with experience. Why would you want to live experience at 15 being beaten in the face? Now, For those of you little smart mouth teens that are telling your mother, ah, I'm not going to do nothing, she ain't telling me what to do, this and this, I'm going to break, and I want you to hear the song that I'm going to play, because I'm going to let you know that we know more than you. We weren't born in a spaceship as adults. Neither did Jesus.
Got that right.
And parents, you need to start opening up. And when those kids try to get snotty and tell you, well, daddy hit you, I saw you go through it, and that's exactly why you could turn around and tell him, which is exactly why I'm the expert on the situation. And I could tell you that it's going nowhere. Don't let them run you down, because I've had it happen.
Yep.
You take what you went through, your bad experiences, because that's what makes your children understand. You are not the far-removed odd person that they think you are from another planet. For those of you young ladies and gentlemen that are out there listening, you know this song very well because it's from one of your teen groups called Paramore. And the name of it is called Ain't It Fun. Please pay attention, and I'll be back in 4.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, back with more on The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody. Teams, that was called Ain't It Fun, talking about how you guys want to go out there and be on your own, not listening to your mother and father, and when things get hard out there, you can't call back. You can't come calling back and crying and defending because you're on your own in the real world, which is why while you have parents that are there, and they might be a little too protective, I might be one of them, okay, we have nothing but the best intentions from you, for you, because you guys are our world. After God comes you. And if anything should happen to you, we would go bananas. So take it, because we've seen way more than you ever have. We've seen it. We've been through it. We've made stupid mistakes just like you. Okay? We've gone down there. We fell in love with the wrong person. We believe that we found the right one for life. We've been used. We've been abused. We've been through it. We did not come to this earth in a Superman kryptonite ship. As full-grown adults, we had to grow from babies to toddlers to youth to adolescents to teens. We've been there, done that. We've done the zits. We've done the funny glasses. We've done the buck teeth. We've done the googly eyes. We've been laughed at. We weren't the most popular. We've all gone through it. Bringing our panelists back, because you heard those of you that's just joining us, Deacon Zeddy Williams lost a 19-year-old beautiful niece with a promising career to a domestic violence situation. So Deacon Williams, yeah. We're back in. So let me ask you both, what did you think of the song?
I hope there were quite a few young people listening to it. I mean, if you're in your parents' household, you need to try and stay there as long as you can and learn all you can. Because it's totally different when you get out there in the real world. And you feel like, yeah, well, I got it going on. I'm out here on my own. I don't have to listen to nobody. I can make decisions for myself. But if you haven't been listening to the instructions of your parents when you were there in their household, and you're just going to just do it your way, that wall is not going to move when you run your head into it.
Elaine,
that's not going to happen.
Sorry, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I agree, yeah. Like, the war is not going to move when you're banging your head into it. Like, most of these teenagers, they don't understand that once they step out that door and they think they can handle it on their own, there's a whole different world out there. They have to have their own home. They have to have a job. They have to know what the hell they're doing to support themselves.
Right.
How do they get to? Ain't that easy getting a job. Now, even if they have a job, it's not that much money that they're going to make, especially living in New York City alone. No. There's no way that they can survive in the little pay that they get from the employment that they have. That's if they have employment. So, you know, I mean, these kids are learning from their parents the struggle and everything. It ain't that easy. And it's very easy. Wait until, okay, fine. Go out there, learn on your own, pay your own cell phone bill. Pay your own, internet. Pay your own rent. That's how you're going to learn. And most of these teenagers, they think it's free until they learn the pain part and the bill part. That's when they think, oh, my goodness, I have to do this on my own. I can't ask mommy. I can't ask daddy. I have to struggle on my own. And that's what they don't understand. This, I mean, I'm sorry, I hate to say it, but it's spoiled. It's spoiled.
Yeah. I was a bold 15-year-old, and my mother had told me that if I didn't like the rules and regulations in our house, that I could let the doorknob hit me. Me, with my bold self, I left home at 15 years old. And it was not as easy as I thought it was going to be, but I was stubborn, and I was determined, well, I'm not going to have to listen to my mother say, "I told you so," to come back home. Believe me, I ran into some hard times, some pretty bad hard times, to where I had to sleep in parks because I refused to go home and admit to my mother that I was wrong and I wanted to stay home. And believe me, I wanted to go back home and be back in mama's house again, but it was just the stubbornness in me. It was a few times of what few belongings I had while sleeping in the park was taken from me. A few times I had to fight to survive to keep my own life. So it wasn't easy at all. And then it got to a point to where I got desperate, to where I was going out and doing things I wasn't supposed to do in order to make money. You know, robbing, stealing, whatever I could do, hustle here and there. You know, it's not a pretty sight out there in the world when you're just 15 years old and you think you got it going on and you don't. It's a big shock to the system, believe me.
That's right.
It is. Elaine, before I move on to the next question, I do want to ask you what you thought of the song track.
No, it's very good. I mean, I never heard it before, actually. This is my actually first time hearing it. It's very good. I just hope that these teenagers actually listen to the lyrics, which is most of them, that's their problem. They don't listen to the lyrics. They just say the words, but they don't actually listen to it and understand what it's trying to say.
We have to understand that everything, anything that is an adult situation that a child encounters is going to be twice as hard on them, because their minds, no matter how much their smart mouth says that they're able to handle it, no maturity in the world prepares a child for an adult experience, because they're not adults. Even God designed order in a certain way, and no matter how developed your bodies are, young ones, no matter how much more advanced than the average person your age you are not a grown-up. You are not developmentally able to handle what comes with it. Now, can you survive through something? Instinctive survival is not the same as being able to critically think through a situation. Okay? If you see a car coming at you and you've got enough room to jump away from it, you're naturally going to do that out of instinct. Okay, that's
right.
Not the same as being able to critically think and strategize through a situation. That comes with experience, with learning that you made a mistake this time to do it better the next time. But you diving into something that you're not supposed to be involved with or thinking about, and then getting into a situation such as domestic violence, give me a break. Adults shouldn't be doing that. But a person at 15 years old telling you that they're jealous and you can't wear makeup and you can't wear your skirts a certain way, or they don't like you wearing, that's not love, sweetheart. A woman telling you that she doesn't want, a girl telling you she doesn't want you talking to your friends or someone that you grew up with because they happen to be of the female persuasion, okay, is not love. It's jealousy. And now, on the other hand, if you were old enough to understand that there are certain things that you would have to improvise with or come to an agreement with to make your relationship, once you're older, be right, that's when you would understand that there are certain ways that you can, you know, alter the way you do certain things. But you're not supposed to know all that stuff at 15. You know, technically, at 18, when you're considered legal, you're still a silly teen. Do you know what? You're just a teen that don't have a curfew anymore.
That's
or that
right.
By law, if you left your house, your mother couldn't go out and call the cops and bring you back. But then, hello, what comes with that is that, what that song said, you're out here in the real world, ain't it fun? But technically, you really don't start getting any knowledge or any real maturity till you're like in your late 20s. And even then, you still got some things that you're dealing with. But you just have a little more grip on stuff and a little more critical thinking in place. But technically, at 14 and 13, you're stupid. You really are. You're not intellectually stupid, but to life. Your life's dumb. You're supposed to do absolutely stupid things over and over and over again till you get it right. Because your mind is always going to tell you that you're riding your parents or not. Your mind at 15 and 13 is always going to tell you that my parents don't know what they're talking about. Really? Okay, then. Go on. That makes you silly. You're supposed to be stupid as a teen.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to fall in love and get stupid and break up, and you're supposed to go out there and make dumb mistakes repeatedly. Because this is your learning phase. You're supposed to think that you're a growing man or a growing woman because your body sizes are bigger than you. You're supposed to think that that makes you something so that you can fall flat on your face and find out it's not. That's what you're supposed to be doing at 15 and 14. Not talking about you with your boo for life. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have a life. You're barely out the womb.
Yeah.
And we can say that, young people listening, because we've been there, done that. We were stupid, too.
Yep.
We fell on our face, our butts, our elbows, everything else, because we told our parents the same thing. And they didn't even have half of the stuff that we have growing up. You know, we're closer to age with our children than they are. We are a little more hip to what you guys do as younger parents than our parents were to us, because we had you younger.
That's funny, Katie. I'm sorry to go, but it's so funny. I'm thinking about when I was 14. I was 14 years old, and I had a boyfriend. And he used to hit me around. He used to just hit me around, and I'm like, you know, it went to the point that we got into an argument in my staircase where I lived at. And we were just arguing like crazy. I told him, you know, he told me to hang out with my guy friends. And anybody who knows me, they know I was a tomboy when I was just a teenager. I hung out with guys, I played any sport with them, whatever, and I was just in, you know. But we got into a huge argument because I was hanging out with guys. He didn't want me around them. And we got into a fight, and he smacked me. He smacked me so hard, and he just knocked my glasses off. And
wow.
He thought he was mad, and he started talking shit. I said, okay, fine. You think you're the man? So I kicked him down the stairs. You know? And just him tumbling down the stairs, I took a good kick right at his chest. And he's taller than me. A good kick at his chest, and I went down his ass, and I told him, you know what? Stay right there. And I ran right out the door, went to my voice, and said, yo, get him. And he went after him. I'm never going to forget that. It hit me right now. I said, wow. I remember I actually defended myself. That was it. I said, this is done. I'm going to kick his ass now. So I said, I'm in here. But I'm going to take him down. And I did. And then my voice, they saw how angry I was. They said, what happened? Go get him. That's what I told him. And he went in.
I had a really bad experience at 14 when I was, and believe me, our 14, back then, we were really stupid because we didn't know. We knew nothing. I mean, really nothing. We really were literally walking into our experiences. And there was a guy that was deemed a menace to society in the neighborhood, terrorized everybody, old people, young people, he didn't care. He took a liking to me, and God knows, everybody thought he was cute, but he was dangerous. I never liked him, and he didn't like that. He didn't like that there was a female on the block, that especially a young one, that wasn't impressionable of him. So he told everyone that I was his property, okay? And I was like, right. I was a smart mouth, too. So I was like, property what? Property is an inanimate thing. I don't know what you're talking about. I walk, talk, and breathe, and I don't like you. You know, that's the type of things I would say. And he never liked it because he was the type of person that he was a criminal by nature. So I remember he started telling everybody that I was his property and that he slept with me. Okay, and you know, back then and even now, a rumor is a very hard thing to live down. Okay, once it starts floating, you could forget it. And by the time it went from point A to point C, the story done magnified three times. Facts, you know, you could have been, according to the fourth story, you were in Germany, you know, flying a plane, and you flew like Wonder Woman, and you wouldn't even know any of these things. But, you know, let people tell it. Okay. How did I get him back? This boy followed me, I don't know, on bikes, on mopeds, everything. And I remember he tried one day to corner me in front of this alley in a building. And when I told him, leave me alone, I don't like you, I don't know you, you're not my family, I'm not even old enough to date. This guy backhanded me so bad, my face was swollen. And I was, and boom, like hit into a brick wall, the brick wall of the building. I remember, man, I ran home. He scared everybody so nobody would come after him. The cops took him away. He was out just the next day. Because, you know, I didn't even know that you're supposed to go to court for arraignment or anything. So for the longest, boys wouldn't talk to me. People wouldn't come near me because I was Bruce's property, according to the rumors. So one day I got him back and I said, I never knew that it only took this thing to bring down a big old bully, right? So, okay, gentlemen, this is for you. So, like, I was thinking, my God, well, how can I get out of this? I'm a virgin. I didn't even, you know, nothing. So one day I used to love pushing people's baby carriages around. I used to be like the babysitter for the block when mothers wanted to have a break. So one day I happened to be pushing a baby from my neighbor, who everybody used to say could be my older sister. So her son sort of resembled me. So we were going down to up and down the block so I could put the baby to sleep. So one of his friends came over to me and said, "Ooh, whose baby is that?" So I looked at him and I said, "Ooh, I got it." I said, "It's mine." "Yeah, right, it's yours." "Yeah, right." And he goes, "It's yours. Who's the father?" I said, "Bruce." So they was like, "Right, oh, that's right. He did say you were his girl." I said, "Yeah, well, he's been telling everybody he slept with me. This is the kid." The minute he found that out, he was like, "Nah, that ain't my kid. What are you talking about? I never even slept with you." I was like, "Thank you very much." The entire block was in. So I was like, "So you mean to tell me, Mr. Big Bad, I beat up everybody, all it took was for me to say that you were a father?" Makes men run every time. So got out of that one. But, you know, it's hard. He was abusive, and I wasn't even anything to him. So this is the thing. If you're going to get involved with somebody and he starts off with flowers and ends up telling you that that's to throw away your makeup, it's not love, ladies and gentlemen. If your girlfriend can't deal with female friends you've been friends with forever before she was even a factor, that's not love. That jealousy is not love. It's not love. And teenagers are less likely to report abuse to anyone, even people that they know would keep a secret. They're less likely to report it, which makes it more dangerous because they'll endure more. And by the time that they do say something, it's damage to them. It's too late. It's too late. So we have to be aware. Now, what can we do as adults? I think we pointed on some of it earlier. We must make sure our children know what the bad things we did, the signs that we had. And when your smart mouth teen tries to tell you, "Well, you did it," exactly why I could tell you why you shouldn't do it. But we tend to be like, "Oh, what did they say to me?" Okay? No, turn it right back on them, because the day that you don't, the street takes them. Maybe we do have to bend a little bit and accept this bad person in our life, but we do have to still remain a parent and say, "You know what, I don't like this young man, but I will tell you this. I'll respect him because he's your choice, but understand that as your parent, your safety and your well-being is my only concern, and I'm going to keep my eyes out on you. But we're going to have some rules about this, and that's the only way I'm not going to have a problem with you seeing this person." And then maybe you could start letting that child feel a little more confident to come to you, or even say, "If you can't come to me, pick somebody out there that you trust, because you have to have a backup at all times." The one thing that my absentee father used to tell me all the time is, when you go out with a guy, you make sure you always have mad money.
Yep, that's right.
That way, if he make you mad, you can take the bus. You know, so that's the one thing that we have to teach our sons and our daughters, not to be dependent on anyone to validate themselves. We have to tell our girls that it's not okay for you to be pounded on for love, that you're not, that you're beautiful in yourself. You deserve a right to be selective in who you pick. You have a right to be selective and picky in who you want to be involved with. And our men need to know the same. Our young men need to know the same, and to know that a woman is not an object for punching, for targeting for sex, for using her feelings to get what they want and then walking off for manhood purposes. And then we have to make them aware that sex is not the big, you know, listen, yep, your little Johnson down there is going to be tingling, and it's all well and good, and sex is a beautiful thing when it comes with responsibility and done the right way. But if you're going to go, you know, start jumping the sack, listen, here's a condom and respect the people you're with. But in the same token, which is another segment, but it's still part of teens at this moment, if your son is in the pool and this child comes up pregnant, she could be hopping everybody in a train from here to Texas. Okay? You need to let him know that until the DNA comes back saying not you, if you were in it, you're in it till it's over.
That's right.
Accountability, responsibility, and learning respect. And fathers, if you're beating up your sons' mothers in front of them, you're not helping. If you're not in your daughter's lives, you need to get in it now, while they're not at the hands of some pimp or some abusive person who might as well be a pimp. Because the girl's father is the first man in her life. A boy's mother is the first woman in his life. You are the first seed planted in their walk in the garden of life. And if you don't plant a solid, fertilized plant in solid soil that's going to keep reproducing good fortune, they have no chances. They're going to have to get a few knocks and busted lips and broken teeth before they finally get it. And that's not the way you should want your child to learn that lesson. I want to talk about the tragedies that come. I'm reading these articles and it bothers me. I have children of all ages here, and these girls, I have a child that was a victim of crime, okay? A victim of crime because of these fast-talking criminals who are a lot more seasoned in the game of learning how to work on their emotions a lot more than a parent can. And especially nowadays when parents are a lot more quickly being deduced the enemy in their own child's eyes. These criminals are sitting at your children's schoolyards watching their every move. They're at the public playgrounds watching when a child is crying and why. Listening in when the child is talking on the phone to their girlfriend about their B-mom or their mean father and how they want this but they can never afford it, or how they want to go there but their parents will never let them. These criminals are out there listening because that's the way they learn how they're going to approach your children. And the first thing they're going to do is appeal to whatever that child feels is a problem or there's no hope for it. They're going to be that offer of false hope. You
that's
can't
right.
afford this, baby. Listen, I got the sneakers for you. You come with me. I love you, baby girl. I'm going to teach you like it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you haven't taught your daughter that that's a smooth talker and you don't need to be listening to that, no matter how angry you get with me, at least love yourself. She's gone. Because just like the devil, they're going to prey on what is the most vulnerable point in your child's life. The same way a girl is going to walk up to your son and say, you know what, I can make you look good, baby, and I got you here. You know what, I can get you all this money, and then you got me.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid, she's one of the most well-developed, sought-after neighborhood girl. She wants me, little old me.
Mm-hmm.
Girls are just as cheeky as any guy could ever be. So I'm not going to keep on putting the bad rap on these men. Because we women and you ladies are just as bad out there nowadays.
Yep, that's right.
Fair is fair, right is right, credit where credit is due. There are a lot of gentlemen out there still trying to make life work, and they're losing a lot of options and a good pick of the crowd. And they're not looking for perfection. They're just looking for somebody who's true and real and got a little respect for him and for herself.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a lot of them still left despite all the crap that you see a majority of. There are a lot of gentlemen that are out there staying with their babies from the day they were born until they grow up. A lot of gentlemen still doing that. So I'm not going to keep on walking around saying that it's just deadbeat dads, because I've seen a lot of deadbeat moms that have babies from 14 and on and think, huh, the babies, they took away my childhood. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to party. You are 39 years old. You can't be partying like you did at 14.
Nope.
No.
Okay? You probably couldn't even do the twist the way you once did because you might come home with some crack. So stop it. I don't like that. You had these babies. You know what? Not that I'm an advocate for abortion whatsoever, but there are alternatives. It might be the first thing. If you can't handle the baby, keep your legs closed. And your zippers up, gentlemen. then the next thing would be birth control, because there's plenty of options out there. But even if you decided you couldn't do that and you have this baby and you can't take care of it, give it to someone who can.
Amen.
Don't have it and leave it, because you know something? Don't have it and be an absentee parent while you're living with the child. That's the worst sort of abandonment. Because that child's going to grow up believing that the first person that comes along and says you're beautiful and I love you is going to be the person that really loves them.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something just that simple. They must have felt ugly or worthless all their life, and somebody came along because they've got another agenda and told your daughter, oh, you are beautiful. Do you know that? She's never heard the word beautiful before. What? Me? What?
Yeah.
Beautiful? You said beautiful? Really? And then I don't know if any of you ever saw the SpongeBob movie, but as soon as Princess Mindy told Patrick that he was, you know, great and gorgeous, he was like, uh-oh. And that's exactly where we are. I'm beautiful? Okay. Bingo. He done sucked her up, and now he's going to abuse her.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll go straight to her head, especially if she hasn't been told that from the people she should be hearing it from, and that's her parents. And especially if it's a female, like she should hear that from her father. You know, so this way, she's out there in the streets or wherever, out there in the world, and somebody says it to her, it won't be nothing new. It's like, hey, I hear that from my father all the time. So, who are you trying to impress? Not impressing me. I hear that from my father. It tells me I'm beautiful all the time. So, what?
And
what are you up to?
He said it better. And he said it better. I believed him. You a liar.
Right.
You know?
I know. And she would tell him, hey, I know he loves me because he shows me it every day. So.
Indeed. I'll tell you that. And that's exactly where it is. Listen, parenthood is a lot more than just putting food on the table.
Yes, it is.
A whole lot more than just handing your kid a $20 bill to go get them an Xbox and keep it moving. A parent has to tell their child every day, I am not going to allow you to be no drug dealer. I'm not going to allow you to grow up and be less than what you can be. You're not going to be one of those people that become a statistic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to let any old smooth talking sucker come over here and swoop you up, because you are worth more than that. You are beautiful and you are my precious treasure. And listen, it's not just for girls, because guys are just as silly, and more so, because a girl could get a guy in a second to do something that they want, and they'll never even know they're doing it.
Yep.
Because God gave women the gift of strategy in the brain. Guys walk out to slay dragons, and women have to cook them. Okay, so that's the thing. It's just that guys got to be told by their mothers every day, you are gorgeous. Listen, I don't care about those zits on your face. That's temporary. And the right person is going to see past the zits and see that heart you have. They're going to see how smart you are. They're going to see how loving and generous you are, how respectable and sensitive you are. They're going to see that you love God and you will respect them, and they, everything about their happiness means just as much to you. And only the right person and the good person will see that in you. Because a real man and a real woman doesn't look at a person's circumstances. But at 14 and 15, you don't know that. So relationships and 14 don't go together. See?
That's the age where you're supposed to just be enjoying your life and just having fun. It's supposed to be the fun part of your life. You shouldn't even be thinking about a real serious relationship. If anything, think about getting your education and putting yourself in a position to travel the world and meet other people and go to different parts of the world and learn how other people live. That's supposed to be a time for you to pile up memories, good memories.
At 15 and 14, you're supposed to be putting posters up of a male celebrity you're in love with and will never have.
Yeah.
At 14, I was married to Michael Jackson, wrote books about him and everything, okay? Knowing that it'll never happen. You're supposed to be trying to grow up and pretend to see what you're going to be when you grow up. That's what you should be saying. You're supposed to be in love with that teen idol band star or whatever. You're not supposed to be about. I'm not.
Sorry, that was my daughter.
Oh, yeah, Chaka Khan.
Sure, I'm 43, and I'm in love with Edward Cullen, and he's a fake vampire on Twilight. I fight with my team all the time.
I don't like Edward Cullen. I'm sorry. I like the other one, the wolf.
Have your dog. That'll be on another. All another,
right, get back to the conversation now.
Yeah, it's another segment. But seriously, you know, that's what you should be doing. You should be doing, because you know what? The innocence goes quick. You're going to be there. Sex is going to be around all the time. Your heart is always going to be pumping for love somewhere all the time, and it's going to come at a time where you are mature enough to handle it. Right now, it's all about the excitement of saying that you had sex and, oh, you know what? Yeah, I did it. You know what I did? I did. You know, that's what it is now. It's a novelty thing. You know, for you to say that you're grown. You're not grown. And the grown thing that you're getting involved with has some deep consequences with it. Very deep consequences. And if
you're
not
so right,
what comes with it, it's going to be a devastation. But to have someone that is 14 beat you up, take out a knife and stab you because they'd rather that you be with them or no one at all. You're not old enough or critically enabled enough to say, I'm not going to be with the man that has needs I can't handle. I don't want to be with the woman that has issues of her own. I'm not prepared to take that on. You don't know how to decipher that yet. You might think you do, but you don't. I don't care. You could be a genius beyond genius. Your mind and your development has not caught up with life long enough for you to make those sound decisions. That's why you are considered a minor until you are 18 years old, and in some cases, till you're 21. That is why the law says you don't know how to consent for yourself with a sound mind till you are of a certain age. Because your hormones and your physical thinking is not critical thinking, people. '14, '15, '12, '13, what are you doing talking about boyfriends and relationships?
Yeah. You got that right.
Yeah, I should get mine to the books, please. Huh?
Should be looking at Team Nick. But it's sad, and we are up against the wall right now. All right, I'm hearing a huge static interference.
What?
I'm hearing.
I'm not hearing it.
Okay, all right, maybe not now. It just went away. Well, we do have to stand up and share with our children our teenage goofy years. We have to talk about what our parents forbid us to do the way we're doing them and why. We have to explain why we appreciate it now where we couldn't see it then. Because our children need to understand we are not strange species from another planet because we're grown people. That we didn't become grown from stepping, you know, we weren't born grown. That storks didn't deliver us to our mommies and daddies, walking, talking, breathing with brains. We have to share with them all of our stuff that we went through. The crazy sexual feelings we had, the cute guys that we lied to our parents to go see, the girls that we traveled on a bus and took our last allowance money to go buy flowers for and went across the states and scared the hell out of our parents when they looked for us. How we lied about having a hickey and told them it was a rock.
That's a
we gotta tell them all of that.
I like hickeys.
Because they have to understand that we are not that far removed. We did go through it. Maybe we didn't have cell phones at the time, but we had bathroom stalls and our friends to pass the notes along. You know, we had our friends to give the notes to our parents. They didn't know we were really still talking to the people they forbid us from talking. You know, so we have to do that. I mean, like we talked about with the chain of command and our children's life leadership, the parents are first, their teachers are next, their church leaders, the city leaders, and afterwards it goes up from there. But it starts from us.
Yeah.
So we do have to stop giving them that line of, oh, you said something sexual. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you want to show me your boobs? No, what? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
They got here because you did the same. Stop it.
Yep.
Because if they're not hearing it from you your way, they're hearing it in the street their way.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right? I tell you, my mother used to act like, what? What did you say? Gosh, gee, don't do that. You know? What? Mom, you have seven. That's what we used to say. What? We used to all think that, you know, different storks lined up, you know, and brought us to them. You know?
Yeah, right.
And then I used to ask my mother, well, then how did the stork know to bring us to you? And then my mother used to tell me, you were always the one that used to ask the questions beyond the question. I said, because I don't understand how a bird could carry a big fat baby in just a cloth and bring them to your door and know that you're supposed to be the mother.
Mm-hmm.
But they told us that. And remember the words that the different little, you know, adjectives they would use for body parts? I remember the first time I started to develop breasts, I had one lump in one side at 9 years old, and I thought that I had the mumps or something. I was like, Mommy, something happened, you know? And so that was the one thing my mother was comfortable telling me. She cracked up laughing when I told her that I had one mump. I said,
aww.
I had the mump in one side of my chest. And I said, I thought I got the shot for the mumps. My mother cracked up laughing. She says, no, sweetheart, that's you about to develop breasts. And I didn't know what that was until she showed me on my sisters and herself. So I was like, oh. But the first time, it was like, what? She had to think of ways to say it that she felt comfortable saying it. I said, you mean breast, Mommy?
Mm-hmm.
So it's got
to nowadays, you have to keep it 100 with these kids, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not for nothing. I tell them exactly the way they hear it, exactly the way they hear it in school, or on the TV, or in the slang. I'm not trying to tell them.
Yeah, because.
You know what you do here.
Yeah, I do the same thing with my daughter. My wife, she asked me, oh, where do babies come from? I told her exactly where it came from. She would give me the look. I said, she's gonna find out sooner or later. It's from here. And now she's terrified. She's like, oh, my God, my baby's funny. Think about that when you graduate out of college.
Well,
you would rather them hear from you than to hear from off a TV or from out in the street from somebody else you don't even know.
I would rather they hear it from me than some guy while they're doing it. And I would rather that my sons understand it from either myself or some man in his life than to have some girl lure him in before he can understand how to protect himself or how to choose for himself. I would rather that. And then I would rather that, you know, some guy that's so driven by his hormones and can't stop himself abuse my daughter to that point of taking it anyway. So, yes, these are the things that has to come up before it becomes to an abusive relationship or a fatality.
Uh-huh.
We do have to. We are down to our last 8 minutes, and I want to play this song because I just got a couple of new teen listeners that just came in for them. When I come back, we will have our closing remarks, and I want all of you to stay tuned tomorrow for Spread Your Wings Showcase Saturday from 7 to 9. I will be posting it up. So I'm going to the commercial right now, and we will be back in 4 minutes. This is, again, Paramore, Ain't It Fun, for all of you teens out there.
No more. You were once defeating on. So what are you doing?
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. That was Paramore's Ain't It Fun, and I am really dedicating that to all of my teenage listeners out there. I really, really hope that all of you listening out there, you know, heard through the fun talk, as well as through the tragedy that Deacon Williams' niece suffered and her mom, and all the other stories that you heard. You've seen the Lifetime television movies. You've seen it in the news. This is a very serious, serious problem. It's a serious, serious problem. This is something that if you disconnect communication with your parents, if you don't understand that, if you don't love yourself, if you don't take it upon yourself to be more selective, to be more confident in yourself, young ladies and young men, you are going to be in a situation that is not just a little jealousy, it's not just a little shove. You can wind up being killed.
That's right.
Love should not hurt in a way where you can't bounce back or you can't cry somewhat if you got your heart broken and pick up and move on. It's supposed to be an experience. It's supposed to benefit your life. Deacon Williams had to sign off a little early before the closing, but I do want to spread my deepest condolences and sympathy to him and his family for that. I pray for that mom. Having lost her baby to something so senseless and idiotic, yet serious as all hell right now. And the cops and the law enforcement officials, you guys have to step up and put some more laws in place before more tragedies. You stop letting these things become outbreaks before you enhance these laws.
Yeah. These laws are like ridiculous, you know? It's crazy. Right now, the police, they don't get involved. They write a report, and now the courts have to deal with it. They all have to go straight to the court. The police don't even deal with it no more.
Orders of protection do not protect. They give somebody legal grounds while they still have a chance to do it, to go and report it. But orders of protection is not going to stop somebody from grabbing your child and dragging them in someplace they don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Orders of protection is not going to stop that person from pulling a bullet and shooting you or trying to stab you. Poor Oritrella, she did not have a chance with being right in school with a bunch of officials around her. So think twice. And meet that perfect person, girl or boy, that turned out to be beautiful in the beginning, but suddenly the honeymoon's over. Very quickly, the first sign of some change, if you don't get clarified quickly, you need to run like hell.
Yep.
Save your life and say no before it gets to a point where this person has latched on to you so much they can't see life without you, according to what they say. Because that's not a profession of love or loving you. That's control.
Yep.
I'm down to our last 2 minutes, Elaine. I want to thank you and for coming in again. I want to thank Deacon Williams for always coming in and your wonderful contributions and sharing your experiences. You know, we are at 8,811 listeners today, and we're going to be well on our way to that 10,000 mark, which we'll be doing a special segment as soon as we can get it all together. Thank you, listeners that are out there listening, for calling in. Thank you all very much for giving me your input, your email responses, your Facebook inboxing, everything. Appreciate it. Please call in with a topic or send it to our email. We listen, and we can make it something that you know affects you or can possibly make a difference from where you're at. So until tomorrow night at 7 p.m. to 9 for the showcase for our entrepreneurs and our artists, be blessed. Be a blessing, teens. Pick your love seriously. Communicate with your parents. Parents, pay attention. Be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. See you here tomorrow at 7. Good night.
Good night.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Lane.